my fellow Americans, our long national nightmare is over.
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 Our long national nightmare is over. Letterman is retiring.
You're just kidding, right?
Personnel, this is CVTS. Base vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It is the Homemade Broadcast, episode 89. Good morning, or good afternoon, or good night, maybe. Whenever you may be listening to this program, how are you? My name is Will Kuntz. You may be listening on Radio St. Pete or RadioSt.Pete.com. If you are, welcome. Happy to have you. Every Sunday, 6:15 p.m. now. We've got a designated time slot, so that's really neat. Really in prime time on a Sunday, 6:15. But hey, you know, you're working your way up, doing one thing at a time. David Letterman retired, I guess, last night. 30-plus years in television. It's weird how people get accustomed to seeing someone, and it's like kind of devastating for at least a couple weeks, I think, and then you probably get over it. But, I mean, for a lot of people, David Letterman was the guy. Some will say he was the greatest talk show host in history, until the next guy comes along, probably. But I got to tell you, I was more of a Leno guy, which is a slap in the face to a lot of comedy fans. But I have many fond memories of watching Jay Leno, staying up late with my grandmother and watching Jay Leno. But that being said, I have a lot of respect for David Letterman. I wish him the best. Go spend that money that you made. You earned it. I'm sure you've already bought, you know, a few things in your time with that money. But there's always more things that you can consume. So I wish him the best. Good luck to you. Stephen Colbert takes over in September, so I don't know what CBS is going to do for 2 months, 3 months until that happens. I kind of thought they would just jump right into it. But I don't know. They're going to show some things. So good luck, Dave. Enjoy your time off. And this podcast is brought to you, of course, by Slybar. Check out why Slybar has been named one of the top 15 businesses in 2015 to watch by I Love the Berg. Got some great beers, some great folks, and some great events, including the Homemade Broadcast open mic, which the next one takes place on Tuesday the 26th. We got free pizza. We got $50 to the best comedian of the night. If you've ever thought about doing comedy, this might be the thing for you. Come out, try it out. I got to be honest, if you bring, you know, 10 people and you get up on stage, even if you stink, you got a good chance of walking away with that money because it goes by audience participation. So it doesn't matter, really. Just come out, get some friends to applaud. Could walk away with $50, get some pizza in your belly, and it's a good time. So you can find Slybar at facebook.com/SlybarSt. So go give them a like and all that. And, of course, Angelo's Bar and Grill, who supplies the pizza. Thank you to Angelo's. The greatest website in the history of mankind, www.saintpizza.com. I cannot believe that nobody snagged that, URL in all the years of pizza places in St. Petersburg. Everyone missed the boat on that one, but they managed to get it. And at least one person comes up to me and says, hey, that pizza was really good. And I say, I know, because it was from Angelo's. You should go there. And I tell them that it is located. Let me look it up quickly. Should have been prepared. It is located. I say, hey, you know where you got that pizza? Angelo's. And it's located at 536 First Avenue North. You should go buy some more pizza. And they say, you know what? Well, I might just go do that. And I say, hey, you should. So you can find them on Facebook, too, at facebook.com/saintpizza. So go give them a like as well. And the last thing I got to tell you about, there is a trunk sale benefiting the Haitian mission Parlefoy. So Haiti's still a mess, and a good friend of mine is putting on this event. It's taking place at the First Unity Church, 460 46th Avenue in North St. Pete. It is Saturday, June 13th from 9 a.m. till 4 p.m. And so basically what the deal is you buy a parking spot at the church, right, for $30. You bring your stuff that's been sitting in your garage that you don't want anymore. You take that stuff, you put it in a parking spot, and somebody will walk along and say, hey, I'd like to buy this urn with your grandmother's ashes in it. And you say, hey, okay, I'll sell that to you, $5. And you take that $5, put it in your pocket, give them the urn with your grandmother's ashes in it, and then that's it. You keep that $5. You don't have to donate it or anything. The donation is for the parking space itself, right? So, yeah, you can make some money, help a good cause. For more information, call Sumi Fink at 727-331-0104. Good. That's all out of the way. Today is Laura Wesley Day, or the War Virgin, which I will be calling her the whole time because that is a great nickname. She's on the program today, and she was lucky enough to have to sit through that brutal intros. Usually I try to record them previous so the guest doesn't have to sit here and look at me while I talk nonsense. But since the app decided to not play along this time, I had to re-record everything. And Laura Wesley is sitting next to me, and she looks mad at me right now.
Do I look mad?
No, not at all.
Is this my mad face? I don't think so.
No, you had a big smile on your face. I'm glad. Yeah.
I just want to know if Angelo's Pizza makes gluten-free, lactose-free pizza. We'll have to find that out.
I doubt it, but I'll ask for you, certainly. I'll see what we can do. Are you allergic to gluten? Don't do the gluten thing?
No gluten, no lactose. It's because I got dysentery in Baghdad, which totally destroyed my digestive system. It's a common thing among the soldiers, so we've got some problems.
How did... That's like a, isn't that like a, something you get on the Oregon Trail?
Exactly.
Like
that is exactly
90s?
The last time I had dysentery was when I was in the third grade playing the Oregon Trail on an Apple IIe computer.
Yes. I remember very
You're
well.
Exactly
I was right there
correct.
Along with you. That's amazing. So what, how did that happen? Like, was it just because the food wasn't refreshed? I don't know how you get dysentery. How did
so
that even happen?
So we didn't have bathrooms. I'm sorry to start off with the bathroom story
no,
right
do.
Off the bat.
Yeah.
So when we didn't have bathrooms, there's a whole sequence of bathroom facilities, and I have a comedy routine that, you know, talks about this. It's in my show. But there's a whole sequence of different bathroom facilities, and when we got to Baghdad, we didn't have anything, and we took over the airport, and there, you know, there was a building, there were bathrooms, but there was no running water, so we weren't allowed to use the toilets. So we had to go outside in slit trenches. So they basically just, like, dug holes in the ground, and we just had to go. There were only like two makeshift stalls, so you just kind of went in front of everybody, though, because they were usually occupied. There were hundreds of us. So we also initially got our food out of these mobile trucks, and it was like the tea rations. It almost felt like they were from Vietnam. Not that I would, you know, wasn't there in Nam, or maybe I was in a past life, but they put these mobile trucks with our food outside, and they were a little too close to the slit trenches. And when it got warm, the flies migrated from what to our food. So hundreds of us were like deathly ill. So that's why
terrible.
I can't eat Angelo's Pizza unless it's lactose and gluten-free.
So where does the gluten-free come from, though? Is it just, so it destroyed your stomach?
Yeah, the intestine lining. And, you know, I could have been genetically predisposed. You don't know, but that certainly didn't help. So a lot of soldiers have a lot of stomach problems.
Yeah. Have you tried the kombucha tea?
Yes.
Are you a fan
of that? I like
that
stuff. Yeah.
I had some at, when I was at USF, we were doing an event over there, and Mother Kombucha was there, which I don't know if you've heard of that.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
And so I had to try some, and I'm afraid of that stuff because I feel like you have those things that are the probiotics in your body. So why do you need more of them? It just doesn't seem right to me.
Some people need a little more help than others, I think.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what it would taste like. It just seemed like it would taste... I don't know why. Because yogurt's the same way I eat yogurt. But for some reason, the tea, I just thought it would taste like bacteria. Yeah. Whatever bacteria tastes like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I was pleasantly surprised because it was delicious.
Yeah, yeah, they can make all sorts of different flavors. So.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think I had the lime, something lime.
Nice.
It was fantastic. I probably wouldn't drink it again, mm-hmm. but I was pleasantly surprised with it. Yeah,
no, I'm a fan.
Yeah. Laura has written a play. Did you write the play?
I did write
you
the play.
You did?
Wrote
the whole thing called The War Virgin. You've been performing it in the Tampa Bay area for how many?
A little over a month now, about 5 weeks now. It used to be a one-woman show that I started in Boston about 2.5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I teamed up with the Gypsy Stage Repertory Company out of Dunedin, and their artistic director is Lil Barkowski, and she saw my one-woman show and was like, I want to team up with you to, you know, make this a more theatrical kind of production. So I live in Boston. I'm from Newport Richie. I'm moving to Dunedin, but I spent this winter in Boston, and when you have 9 million inches of snow, there's nothing better to do but to write a musical comedy show.
Of course. Everybody does it. Yeah. Every year.
So I wrote it, Lil cast the actors in it, and we kind of teamed up and put it all together, and so we've been performing it, and our next performance is on Sunday, May 31st at 5 p.m. at the Blur, comedy or the Blur Show Club, I think it's called, and that's in downtown Dunedin.
Do you have the address for that?
I'll look it up. Yeah, I actually have a flyer. I know it's Main Street. I just don't remember exactly what number of Main
Street. Right downtown. That's a fancy place. I'm a fan of the downtown Dunedin area. Mm-hmm. Is it the Chickaboom Room?
It's right next door to that. Yeah, so it's connected to that. That's like the restaurant.
The restaurant. Hold on one second. Let me look this up. Blur. Dunedin.
Blur Nightclub and Show Bar. That's the...
Wow, that is pretty fancy. Old Town, no. This is giving me someplace in Scotland.
Oh, well, you know, correct. We would like to take the show on the road, so if there's any sponsors in Scotland that want us to go overseas...
325 Main Street in Dunedin. You can reach them at 727-736-0206. And that's the 31st, you said?
Yep, at 5 p.m., and tickets will be $12 at the door.
Is this the end? You're not going to do it again?
This is the end for now. I have to go back to Boston, and I have to finish writing my memoir and sell my condo. You know, just a few little things.
Yeah.
And then I'll be back here in August, and then we're going to regroup, and then we definitely want to expand the show. We'd love to go on tour. We just have to figure out the best plan to do that. It'd be really nice to get some sponsors or to connect with theater companies in other cities. But for now, this will be the last show. But there's so much more to come. I mean, the audiences are saying that they see a big future for this. So hopefully it'll expand into something even bigger.
Yeah. So when I first heard about The War Virgin was after you came to the Creative Loafing Space show that we did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was pretty hammered by the time I was talking to you.
It was pretty late, so likely.
It was like 11:30. I have no excuse.
Completely appropriate.
For this anymore. I cannot drink anymore. I don't know
what
the deal
is. I can't
either.
No, I'm such a lightweight now. It's ridiculous.
I had 2 beers.
And you felt
and I was,
it.
I had a headache the next day. It's humiliating.
We must be around the same age.
I'm 30. I just turned 30
this
year.
I'm a little bit older. I'm 36.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. But it happens. You hit 30 and then your body changes. You can't eat this. You can't drink that.
It's crazy. Like I was worried at one point about my drinking. And I went and asked my dad about it. And he was like, well, his advice was, well, if you're asking me and you're worried about it, you're probably fine. Which ended up being solid advice. I think
exactly.
I was just more sad at that time
than
others. But now I don't know what's going on. It's just like a couple beers, I get a headache, I don't feel good. It's just not worth it anymore. And I love drinking. Being drunk is hilarious. It's so much fun. But the aftermath.
I think maybe you should try some milk thistle. That's my secret. What I tell everybody, I'm kind of like a supplement pusher,
mm-hmm.
and it's a liver support, and I take that whenever I drink, and it helps.
Really?
It's like, it helps your liver to process the alcohol.
Okay.
And this is your free pharmaceutical advice, everybody. You can go buy it at CVS. You can buy it in the health food store. So
All
I take
right.
milk thistle when I drink, and it...
Beforehand?
I kind of do it while I'm drinking. Like, I have a sip of wine, I pop the milk thistle in my mouth. It really doesn't matter.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and that helps your liver process the alcohol. It mitigates hangovers. I mean, if you really overdo it, it's not going to do much for you, but that might help.
Yeah, I'll give it a shot. Yeah. I'm desperate at this point because I'd love to be able to drink.
I mean, it's such an important part of our lives.
Yeah.
What are we going to do without it?
I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do. It's so much fun. It's a nice escape every now and then.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's saving me money, at least, I figure.
Yeah. So, I spend a lot less money on booze too,
and the calories.
Yeah,
and it's not a cheap hobby. No. So it's
especially if you like the good stuff.
I'm not picky. I learned at an early age to make sure you like cheap stuff. Mm-hmm. So I do enjoy the finer things, of course. Yeah. But on my day to day, I don't mind sipping on a Bud Light or something like that. Yeah. I'm a craft beer fan, and I know there's a lot of my friends are too, but they won't even dabble into, if you drink a Bud Light in front of them, they like look at, and I'm like, shut your mouth.
Yeah, they're prejudiced.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Beer snobs.
I know, it's stupid. So tell me more about the War Virgin, because this is not, I thought it was just an anti-war piece. I just assumed, you know, you don't judge a book by its cover, but with my haze of two beers, I just assumed it was an anti-war piece. We had talked about you coming on that night, and then I didn't hear from you until recently. Mm-hmm. And I guess because you got the other show, now you're able to come
exactly.
in.
Exactly, yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the show.
Okay, sure. So I'm a West Point graduate, and I'm an Iraq War veteran. And I was in Iraq in 2003 for the invasion. We actually weren't allowed to call it an invasion. We had to call it a liberation because we were liberating the people of Iraq. And it is my story. It's my journey of repression, temptation, and liberation, which just so happens to transpire on the battlefield. It's my coming of age story. It's basically, I grew up in a very religious, strict environment. You know, my father was very oppressive. I was very obedient and I followed the rules. And then you go to West Point, it basically was an extension of my childhood. And I didn't dabble in things like a lot of other college students do. And West Point isn't necessarily the place to go sow your wild oats and figure out what kind of crazy college person you want to be.
Right.
So the reason it's called War Virgin is because not only was I a virgin at going to war, but I was a virgin overall, period, virgin at the age of 24, which is an anomaly. Wow. And then I realized when I was in Iraq that, you know, what if I die? What if I've never really lived my life for me and I've been following these rules all along and I really just started to unravel basically on the battlefield? Well, also, a lot of people have a misconception about how occupied you are during war, and there's a lot of downtime, and there's a lot of boredom, and you don't really have a place to go escape. You don't have, you know, going out to bars or restaurants, and there's actually a rule called General Order Number 1 that prohibits alcohol consumption on a deployment, and it also prohibits people from engaging in activities
right.
of the fun kind. So, you know, there's really no fun outlet, but there's so much downtime, and that's when people really start to go crazy. And people break the rules all over the place. I mean, General Petraeus, hello.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if anybody's going to break the rules, you know, of course. So you see a general doing that. It was just indicative of what's happening. So I really started to unravel, and I really started to question these institutions that were telling me to be perfect and to be a certain way. And I decided to give that all up. And I mean, I waited until I came back to take care of matters personally, as far as losing my virginity. But the show just really, you know, it showcases how I completely changed. My values completely changed because of the war. And, you know, we were saying that we were liberating the people of Iraq, but in a lot of ways, the war liberated me. Mm-hmm. And so I finally decided to, you know, figure out who I was and come into my own. And I use humor as a coping mechanism. A lot of soldiers use humor as, it's very common in the Army, you know, to be very sarcastic and to be very humorous. And so I find whenever I tell my war stories, I might be, you know, talking about this crazy boss that I had that was really intrusive and, you know, wanted to know when I was going to go take a shower and come back, you know, because he needed to see me at all times. But you joke around about it. You make fun of them. And so I had decided that I wanted to write a memoir. I started writing a book in 2008. I think I'm going to finally finish it in a few months.
Okay, that's good. That's
I've hired a little bit of help to, you know, help me finish it because it's such a huge undertaking.
Sure, sure.
And when I first started writing the book, it was like an angry Alanis Morissette rant. And I'm like, this isn't really how I want to convey things because this isn't how I communicate. This isn't how I tell my stories. And when I would actually tell people the stories, I'd be laughing in stitches. I'd be having them, you know, in hysterics. And somebody suggested, well, have you ever told your stories on stage? And the thought never really occurred to me. And I took a comedy writing class to help me figure out how to make my writing sound more like I speak. And then that's how I got started with storytelling, because I took a comedy class and the instructor was like, you suck at writing jokes, but you're a storyteller. I'm like, yeah, that's why I'm here. I'm trying to make my book funny. So I found an organization in the Boston area that does storytelling. They're like, it's like the Moth on NPR. But it's like a grassroots, smaller version of that. So I just went to all these storytelling events and I just made sure that whenever I told a story, I tried to like tie in a war story or a West Point story. So soon enough, I had a whole collection of stories. And one of the ladies, Andrea Lovett, that runs it, she was like, you need to put together a one-woman show. And she helped me to put together a one-woman show that I did about three, you know, series of those in 2012, and then took a little bit of a break. And then in 2014, just started performing it at different events, different veteran events. And then I happened to do it in Dunedin. So my mom saw it.
Wow.
Yeah, that was quite a milestone.
Are your parents still together?
My father passed away about a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. So he never saw or heard of it. And there was a family estrangement in there. And that's actually in the show. And I'm very comfortable speaking about that publicly. But he didn't get to see anything about War Virgin. But when he was in hospice, I basically delivered my comedy routine to him. That totally rips on him. And everything that he taught me about the birds and the bees and how he'd try to spy on me after dates. And he laughed so hard in the hospice center. So it was like my way of making peace with him.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like he was kind of down with it too.
Yeah.
You know? I wonder if he may have regretted some of the things.
I think he did. Yeah. I think that when I was singing and performing, like he had a lot of regrets for how things had happened in life, but it was really on his last days. He was, you know, really heavily medicated. So he wasn't super articulate, but you know, he was like, oh, I wish I could be your talent manager. And that's in the show too. So the show also chronicles my relationship with my father, you know, from childhood all the way up until the end.
And if you're just joining us, I'm sitting down with Laura Wesley. Laura wrote The War Virgin, which is her last performance for sometime anyways, will be May 31st at the Blur Nightclub and Show Bar in Dunedin. So you kind of started, you grew up in a very religious home. So from an early age, this was kind of pounded into you. So what religion was it? What branch?
So there's a lot of iterations of religions.
Oh boy.
So started off Catholic, which was fine.
Yeah.
I mean, it was totally fine because I went to St. Thomas Aquinas Catholic Church in Newport Richey, Florida on Old State Road 54, I believe it is.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was really fun. It was very social. We had a lot of friends there. And then when I turned 11, Daddy became born again.
Uh-oh. How did that happen?
I'm not quite sure because I'm trying to find that out for my book, and I'm not quite sure. I think he met some people who started preaching the Bible to him, and then he started comparing what was taught in the Catholic Church to this whole story of salvation. It didn't match up. He challenged the priests. The priests weren't really engaging with his questions. So he ripped us out of the Catholic Church.
Wow.
And then we went to Calvary Temple Pentecostal Church in Newport Richey.
Oh, no.
Which, you know, accustomed to the Catholic Mass, all of a sudden people are dancing in the aisles. On my first day of church, an old man like grabs me by the arm and starts like do-si-do-ing with me.
How old were you?
I was 11.
Okay.
And I thought, these people are being awfully rude. Isn't the pastor upset with them not sitting politely in their seats and listening to the sermon? But I didn't know. I didn't know that people spoke in tongues.
Mm-hmm.
And I was spooked. I was terrified. I was terrified. I'm like, if this is what being saved is and what the Holy Spirit's all about, I'm like, I'm scared. Mm-hmm. But they had a revival one night, and everybody would go up and get a blessing, which is basically the pastor bopping you on the head, and then people would fall down and they'd be slain in the spirit. And I was like, I'm not feeling it. What am I going to do? And my dad falls down and he's slain in the spirit. My mom fell down. I'm like, come on, mom, you're from the Bronx and you're Roman Catholic. But I don't know if she really felt it. I totally faked it. Because I knew that was the only way I was going to escape that.
I think everybody does.
I think everybody.
Yeah, that's the thing.
So I kind of fell down carefully and, you know, then went back to my seat. But I actually caught a child molester in that church. Yes, I kind of knew. I think I was taught a lot about how to spot bad people. Mm-hmm. And he was lurking in the children's church, and I reported him. And the pastor was allowing him to roam freely around the church. So that's when we left, and we went to a bunch of different churches. Mm-hmm. No church was ever good enough for Daddy. He knew too much. He was prophetic. So we ended up doing church at home.
Oh, so he started preaching himself.
He started preaching himself at home. I mean,
cut
it was
out
just
the middleman.
Yeah, cut out the exactly. Yeah. If you want efficient, low cost church.
6 hour sermon.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we read a lot from the book of Job, the story of suffering and pain.
Of course.
And he thought he was like Job. And we'd have family prayer time, and then he'd have dating inquisition time when he'd ask me, so what's your boyfriend trying to do to you? And I'd be like, I'm sorry, Daddy, I promise I won't do this again. So, you know, even though I knew the messages of being pure and being chaste, I felt like my father could be like a mind reader. So that always kept me on the straight and narrow as well. But I did get away with some stuff. You know, I tried to explore and have some fun, you know, but try not to, you know, look him straight in the eye like, yes, I was fooling around or doing this. So.
Yeah, there's always ways to get around certain things. There's little loopholes you can jump through.
Perfect, exactly. It's like, well, if this is what the church defines this as, then I'm going to do as much as I can but that.
Yes, there's other orifices that you could use.
Exactly.
That you could, you know, find a way around this.
And yeah. I can still keep... Oh, and the big thing that it's in the show is my father taught me that if I lost my virginity, he would be able to tell because I would lose that special sparkle in my eye.
Man, that's
so
weird.
It became about what can I do to maintain that sparkle?
Yeah.
That's what
just
it was all
dumps,
about.
Dumps sprinkles or whatever you call them, sparklers in your eyeball.
Exactly.
That always works. My God.
Yes.
So that, and what age was this when you started kind of preaching at home?
The home church was later in high school. So it was probably my senior year in high school. So 17, 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing home church.
Is it fair to say that pretty much from a young age, you didn't buy into this whole thing, but and you did it because you loved your dad and you wanted him to be happy with you?
Yeah, I mean, there was definite, like, I definitely believed in God. I believed in Jesus, but most of it was influenced from my father. I didn't take everything at face value. I've always questioned everything. I mean, especially in that Pentecostal church. But I didn't necessarily, I pushed back. I questioned a lot, but I was also terrified, you know, because he had a crazy temper. And so I just, you know, I needed to do whatever possible to survive in that kind of environment. So I believed some stuff. I didn't believe other things. And when I went off to West Point, I joined the Christian community and I questioned it, but there was a lot of bad things that I haven't even... This part isn't even in my show, but a lot of religious influences, like West Point definitely has a big evangelical Christian society, and they were all about pushing the purity too and brainwashing, and there was a lot of gender discrimination there. And they basically taught us that women were the inferior gender to the men. West Point itself wasn't teaching this, although you kind of feel that way as a woman there sometimes, that, you know, a lot of chauvinistic men there. But there's in the evangelical Christian community, they were basically teaching us at the age of like 19, 20, 21, you have to submit to your husbands, and your role in life is to be your husband's helpmate and to look out for your children. And I'm like, I got to graduate and become a lieutenant in the Army. Can't we talk about some other important things like leadership and taking care of your soldiers and things like that? But so there, and there was a lot of accountability, and most Bible studies centered on being pure. And like that's all we talked about. We didn't talk about famine or genocide or any, you know, important global issues, but it was all about, keeping your hands off of each other.
Yeah, and I wonder why. I mean, I guess I can understand to a certain extent in the Army or the branches of the military, just because, and when you say, you know, there's a lot of chauvinistic males, those guys are they're killers. They are trained killers. They have a job to do. Mm-hmm. Most of those, you know, infantry anyways, I don't know, I guess.
It's in the other branches too. I mean, everybody's unique. I can't make an overall, you know, say men in the military like this, because that's, you know, that's not the case. Different branches have their different stereotypes, but you find chauvinism in every branch, just like you find chauvinism in, you know, all sorts of different people. So,
I think though, I guess my point was, you kind of need it, I think, in order to do your job. You have to be an animal.
And I think the military, I speak for the Army, they ascribe to that belief. And what I would like to help teach is that I believe you can have women be feminine and also be effective warriors. Perhaps there would be more diplomacy reviewed before necessarily engaging in force. And that's what I would really like to promote. I definitely side with, you know, because you were wondering if this was an anti-war show. And it doesn't necessarily specify that. There is a scene where I question whether or not we're the, quote, bad guys. But I would like for the, you know, people to be able to draw from the show presented in such a goofy, musical, comedic manner that war is silly. So I would like to think that there is some kind of, you know, anti-war message in there, you know, that maybe we should really think about this and its effect on people. But I would like to challenge, and it definitely is promoted in the Army. And one of the things too is the Army, I believe that their solution to gender integration is to masculinize women and make them, you know, basically you have to be like a man in order to be good at your job. And I would like to see things change to where women can feel comfortable being feminine and not have to apologize for their gender and show we're just as effective at being warriors. Mm-hmm. And we can do the job. Like, I mean, I was definitely prepared. I had a loaded weapon. I was definitely prepared to do what I needed to do. Luckily, fortunately, I was never put in a situation where I was in a firefight. I mean, there was stuff blowing up all over us as we were invading because we drove in Humvees in a single file line at 2 miles an hour with our headlights on. So, and you could never tell if stuff was coming from us or towards us because it was, you know, the desert and things were, you know, dusty. But, you know, so luckily I was never challenged in the manner where I'd have to engage in some kind of firefight, but I would like to see some, you know, ideological changes where, you know, women can be feminine and be effective warriors and let's, you know, try to integrate better.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, Laura Wesley is sitting with me today. She is the performer and writer of War Virgin, which has its last show on May 31st of the season, anyways, at Blur Nightclub and Show Bar, 325 Main Street in Dunedin. Tickets are $12.
$12 at the door.
Where can they purchase tickets?
Just at the door.
Okay.
And we kind of recommend to call Blur in advance if you want to reserve a seat. We think this show is going to be the most packed. I mean, the town of Dunedin is just doing such an amazing job promoting this. And I feel like it's definitely going to be our best attended show.
That's great. What time does it start?
It starts at 5. And 5, doors open at 4.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. So, let me ask you, since you were a veteran, I don't know if you heard about this, but in New York, they let a firefighter cadet that was a woman that did not pass the skills test. She failed, but they're going to let her in because the mayor's encouraged to hire more women. My issue with that is that if she needs to pull my fat behind out of a building, is she going to be able to do that, or is she going to risk both of our lives? So what's a way to kind of, I'm all for equality.
Right.
But
right.
My concern is for not only my health, but also that woman that's going to drag me out of the building. So how do you, I don't know. How does that work? Like, what is a way that to make things equal? And
well, I know that and women are attending Ranger School for the first time in the Army. This is the first class happening with women attending Ranger School, which is a huge, it's like the toughest school in the Army. You will always hear every woman that I've ever worked with and ever known in the military urges, do not lower the standards. Mm-hmm. Do not lower the standards for women because it devalues the accomplishment. And yes, and then you're right, it could put lives in danger. So the answer is not to change the standards. It's interesting because there's an Army physical fitness test and there's different standards for men and women. Although passing it is very easy, but you get to, you know, get a higher score if you don't have to do as much physically as the men. I actually think that's just such a ridiculous, obsolete, stupid test. It's just push-up, sit-ups, 2 mile run doesn't equate to anything, any skills really that are needed in the military. The Army has several different branches. So like there's infantry, there's aviation, there's, you know, human resources, Adjutant General Corps, which is what I did. And I think that, you know, there's different skill sets required for each different kind of job in the military. And so I think that, you know, as far as the military goes, as long as a woman can pass those, you know, physical standards and the skill tests, you know, then she should not be barred entry to that. And the military a couple of years ago made that, you know, change. Mm-hmm. As far as how to more like to how to better integrate these women who may not necessarily possess the skills, that would just be through training. You know, just it may be that there could be more training in place to make sure that they get the skills, you know, that they have access to the skills that they need to acquire. Education and training is, I think that's the best way to do it, but absolutely do not lower the standards because it puts too many lives at risk and it devalues the accomplishments. So
yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. So we got a few minutes left, but so what can people, also what I want to say too is you're very open. I've read some of your interviews. You're very candid and I appreciate that. I try to be an open book.
Well, thank you.
Not because necessarily that it's a virtue, but because being honest is just easier, and I'm very lazy of a person. So I like, and I find I like the candidness. Just I find it very refreshing.
Well, thank
and
you.
Growing up in an oppressive household, and you know, even going to into the military, which is another oppressive atmosphere. How did it just come to, I'm just going to be, just let it go all of a sudden?
I mean, it's my personality. Like, I think I definitely have a personality where I'm pretty vulnerable and transparent. But it also, something that really hit me was, you know, looking in bookstores and looking at books written about West Point, looking at your traditional male memoir about war, and it portrays like the all-American man storming up a hill, leading his troops into battle, and it's just not reflective of like 99.5% of the military. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, this is how we're portraying something that's not accurate. And so I feel like it's important to educate the public about what really goes on. And just like I see these books about West Point, I see documentaries about West Point, and we're portrayed as these superhuman robots, but we're humans. And West Point's a college. There's a lot of, you know, athletic, eager college students thrown together in the barracks. So things happen despite what West Point says, you know, happens.
Right.
And so I just feel like it's really important to be upfront and candid because I had to live and basically be a character and be someone who I wasn't for the sake of perpetuating a false image. And now I want to get rid of that. I want to teach everybody what it's really like. I am not going to be someone who I'm not, and I'm not going to apologize for who I am. And I think that's important. And I think that there's a lot of mental health issues that happen when people feel like they can't be themselves. And I feel like veterans and even West Point graduates don't allow a certain level of vulnerability, and they assume that everyone else in their demographic is doing a lot better than them because people aren't willing to come forward and say, I have depression, right. I struggle with suicide, I need help. and they just assume everybody else is doing better. And if we could just be honest about what we struggle with, then we can support each other and be comforted by that. So I think that's a huge part of my message.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. And even there was a comic at one of the open mics that talked about exposing himself on the Pinellas Trail when he was a kid. And I did that too. I remember it was probably 8-9 years old, and we would just flash bike, hey, look at this, and just pull our tiny penises out and show the bike riders. I don't know why. I have no, probably just because, you know, the hormones start going on at that
exactly.
time.
You're
like, and it wasn't anything sexual or anything like that, but probably leading up to becoming a teenager. And I wasn't ashamed of it necessarily, but it was something I wouldn't probably talk about candidly unless was maybe drinking a few beers or something like that. But to hear that guy tell the same story, I was like, whoa, that's awesome.
It validates you.
Totally, totally. I'm not just some creep. I mean, I am a creep, but I'm not just some creep. You know, there's reasons why we do things, and there's chemicals in our brains and so on that makes us do these silly things. So I feel like it's just, like I said, it's just a better way to go through life rather than bottling it all up, because human beings do weird things.
We are. Alone. We're human. We're not perfect.
Yeah. And that's a great thing about us too. We're walking poems, you know, it's a great, I don't know. It's just good to be alive.
That's why nonfiction's my favorite, because you can't make the stuff up that I write and talk about. You can't make it up. And it's so much better than anything my imagination can come up with.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. Real life is far more fascinating than anything you could write. That's for sure. So quickly, let's break down what can one expect when they go in.
I'll give you a summary of the show. So, I narrate the show and I sing in it, and there's four other people in the show. There's four actors in the show. There's a character and she plays me. And then there are two other characters, and they play, they're men, and they play different men in my lives, like my father. They play the boyfriend that I eventually lost my virginity to, and I dated him in high school. So there's that character. There's a couple of war buddies that, you know, there's two men, and they each play four characters. So it's pretty fascinating. There's a drag queen in the show as well.
Nice.
Yes, yes. I'm not going to give away what their role is, because that's like a little surprise at the end, you know, a nice conclusion. And there's a lot of music, a lot of musical parodies, but it's also very patriotic. We start off with the national anthem, and then the first scene is I'm narrating. It's my childhood. It's how my father taught me about the sparkle in my eye and what I was doing to figure out how this fit in with the birds and the bees. And so you have like all narrate, and then the actors play out the scene, and there's music that accompanies it. I write musical parodies, so I'll take a popular song, I'll change the lyrics around and make it pertinent to that.
Weird Al style?
Exactly. Uh-huh. I saw him in concert when I was at West Point.
Oh, yeah?
Amazing.
He's a fun guy,
yeah,
for sure.
So very inspirational. And then in between the scenes, there's also some parodies that, you know, pre-recorded of me singing. And the second scene is at West Point, so people get an idea of what it's like to go to West Point on your first day. So I narrate that. It's played out. And then you find out the secret to West Point's parade program. I will just leave it at that. I don't want to give away the story. And then it transitions into a scene with my father where it shows the conflict and why we ended up becoming estranged, and then it leads into war and so what happened. But it's a lot of really funny stuff that happened with war, like the rule that doesn't allow you to drink or have sex. The bathroom situation is very played out. There's a whole song that talks about going to the bathroom in war. So, and then after the war scenes, there's a scene about me coming home, and, you know, the big number one thing to do on my to-do list was lose my virginity. And then it finishes up with my father in the end. And then there's a really funny conclusion to that. And so just a ton of music. It chronicles my life.
It's good.
It's absurd. You know,
yeah.
It's crazy. It's absurd. Audiences love it. But there's very poignant moments to it as well.
Right on. Well, Laura Wesley, thank you very much for coming on. You can see her at May 31st at the Blur Showroom and Nightclub, 5 p.m. $12 tickets at the door.
Yes.
Laura, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Will. I appreciate
it. You got it.
Thank you for your time.
Follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/thehomemadebroadcast. Twitter, home_made_man. Find Laura at warvirgin.com. I will talk to you weirdos very soon. Take care. Bye.